Hello and welcome to Men in Charge. I'm Kevin Decker.
And I'm Tony Flynn. And before we go any farther, before you say, ooh, I have to go to the refrigerator for a minute, and before you open another cellophane bag of corn-based snack products, you need to take note of today's title. Today's episode is called Our Sons Are Jackals.
Oh, this is a universal truth, ladies and gentlemen.
It is.
You may not even have sons, but the people that you call your sons in a metaphorical way are probably jackals.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Biologically, anatomically, psychologically, our sons are jackals.
Yeah, that's right. They're kind of, waiting for us to die in that regard. They're like jackals. They're nipping at our heels. They're like jackals.
Yeah, they're ready to stand on our chest and start going for the abdomen.
That's right. But the thing is, they don't even go for the first kill, really, right? Jackals are, what do you call them? They're not predators.
They're scavengers.
They're scavengers.
Yeah,
right. It's the opposite of predators.
They wait till the larger animals have clubbed us.
Right. Right.
And then when we're in a weakened, vulnerable state, they dive in and consume every element of our being.
That's right. And so metaphorically, literally, in whatever sense you want that ends with L-Y, our sons are jackals, ladies and gentlemen. And you better take a close look at your own life and see whether this doesn't also apply to you.
Yeah, because, for example, if you are a son,
yeah,
as Kevin and I are,
yeah,
we're jackals.
No, we were jackals in our own.
Well,
regard.
We remain jackals, yeah, as long as we remain sons. But Kevin, my sons are older than your sons. We each,
yeah,
have two, Wally,
right,
and the Beeve.
Right.
It's funny that we named them the same,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is weird.
But mine have been more entrenched in jackaldom simply because they're 10 years older.
They're older, yeah, that's,
yeah,
right. Yeah, mine are still learning. You know, it's helpful that today's universities are kind of taking kids in hand. Mine are still in college and offering 2-credit classes in jackalry,
yes,
things like that.
They
it's
do.
It's a career services offering. So
it is. And I think jackaldomhood is good career preparation because
it really
in the new Vichy America, it's basically peopled by jackals. Jackals are the,
yeah,
founding ethical model, aren't,
yeah,
they?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the 1%, right, are kind of like the super predators. And so the only chance that the rest of us really have is if we are effective and efficient as jackals.
So to say our sons are jackals, it sounds like a criticism, but
no,
actually it's a set of habits and attitudes which we need to encourage for their own survival.
I think that's right. I think,
yeah,
that's right.
So it really didn't advance our schemata.
No.
In any particular way.
It helped our imagination.
Well, if by imagination we mean distance from the
reality,
palpable, yeah, empirical world, yeah.
Yeah,
it's true.
We have sketches that are well distanced from the factual and empirical world.
Coming up first, our first segment, we return at last to the saga of Emily Wellingtonford, Canadian mine owner and usurer. What's her particular adventure today, Kevin?
This is the first of a 2-part adventure where Emily leaves the familiar confines of Coronach, Saskatchewan, in order to head to the exotic and mysterious town of Edmonton.
Yeah.
So Emily is there to do some work for her government. Of course, the Make America the Bee's Knees movement in America of the 1920s is there to oppose her. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, and you can learn a history of the American tariff tradition.
Oh, a lot of tariff trivia in this one. That's right.
We don't meet Senator Smoot,
no,
in this particular one, but we probably will
we
in
probably
part
will.
Two as soon as you write it, Kevin.
Yeah, I have an accent that I need to use for him.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds like this. Anyway.
It should. After that, we're hearing from a new sponsor,
that's
the
right,
Jared Kushner Division of the Vichy America Laboratories, or VAL, if you're a big fan of acronyms. And he is introducing the Power Bro. It's, mm-hmm, a wonderful new tool for your car if you're a bro and you've got money and you carry your whiteness real proudly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most GPSs have this main flaw. They respond to reality as it exists on the ground. But Power Bros don't have the time for that sort of thing.
Right.
If they say it, it must be believed.
Yeah, and they like beer.
Yeah, and they like beer, and people are trying to destroy them and their family.
Yeah.
So we hope that this GPS will be a great success for Vichy America Labs and Jared Kushner.
The guy needs all the help he can get.
That's true. And then finally, Tony and I do something that we had to be paid an enormous amount to do, which is ride the city bus.
Which we love, but the Lower Heights buses, as we know from previous episodes, they're a treacherous place, and this is a fairly surreal journey.
It is,
isn't it? That's right.
We take our recording equipment with us. We get on the bus at Pansy Hollow. We're going to ride it all the way to Upper Lower Heights and back again. And if we survive, you will hear the results of that quest.
And if we don't, you'll hear the results of that quest.
Oh, that's true.
But in either case, it's a harrowing journey. Lives are changed. Lives are destroyed.
Hair is cut.
Hair is cut. Therapy is indulged in.
Is offered and sometimes refused.
And now it's time for Emily Wellingtonford, Canadian mine owner and usurer. Tonight's episode, Expedition to Edmonton. The time is 1926. The place is the well-hewn trail between Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, and Medicine Hat, Alberta, a trail that will later become known infamously as the Trans-Canada Highway. Mrs. Emily Wellingtonford, a solitary female, rules the bustling mining town of Coronach, Saskatchewan, with a smooth, silky fist. Mrs. Wellingtonford, a youngish widow pining for the husband she never knew, is a graduate of Queen's Prince Edward Academy with a CPA, Certificate in Professional Avarice. We join Emily now, traveling to distant and exotic Edmonton for the American-Canadian Shafta Talks. She travels in the luxury of a sleek 16-cylinder 1926 Chrysler Imperial E80 touring car, boasting 30,000 horsepower. She is driven by her chief lackey and irregular confidant, Mrs. Wepford.
This dreary, dreary West Saskatchewan landscape. Wepford, look at it go by.
Yes, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
I hate it, and yet I wish to possess it. But the trust that administers Shelton McFarlayford's accumulated acreage has explicit instructions never to sell for me.
Yes, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
Mind you, I had just poisoned him after he turned down my hand in marriage.
Yes, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
And mentioning that makes me miss my Archie. He says that he enjoys his new padded chains. Do you think we left him enough Dom Perignon and elk jerky to suffice for our trip?
I don't know, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
Oh, this land is dreary, dreary, dreary. I shall have to daydream about the hockey team that I just bought. What were they called, Wepford?
It's an amateur hockey team, Mrs. Wellingtonford. The Kamloops Wolverines.
Oh, yes, Wolverines. They're so fierce. You know, Wepford, the most dangerous animal in Canada is a wolverine cornered in its den.
Your mother, God bless her soul, thought the most dangerous animal a mother moose.
Mother is dead to me, Wepford. Mostly because she's actually dead, but also in the sense that I no longer heed her advice. She would have been unable to imagine the fierce wolverine exuding a high musk, its claws flailing, inadvertently tearing my chiffon dress.
We're almost there, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
In any case, before long we'll be moving those wolverines to play in Coronach.
They're a volunteer team, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
When has that ever stopped me from getting something I wish, Wepford? Having purchased the gambling debts of the players and their coaches, I've saved them from the tender mercies of the British Columbian Mafia. They'll be delighted to join us in Coronach.
We're here, ma'am.
Wepford, you cretin, this is never Edmonton. It has neither Edmonton's foggy mystery nor its government-purchased advertising that apologizes for public policy gone seriously wrong.
No, ma'am. We're on a lay-by just outside of Medicine Hat. You asked me to stop at the next Tim Hortons.
Yes. That's quite correct, Wepford. The lady must have her donut.
Yes, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
Hour after hour of dreary landscape. This time, the landscape of tragically flat yet nobly wheat-covered Alberta rolls by. Finally, Mrs. Wellingtonford is greeted at the gilded doors of the Edmonton Ritz-Carlton.
Hello, Mrs. Wellingtonford. I'm Eugene Weberford, and I'll be your liaison with the Canadian government as negotiations with the Americans go forward.
All I want right now is a hot bath and to be put to bed, Weberford.
I'm not sure that's in my job description, Mrs. Wellingtonford, but, I suppose I can handle a loofah with the best of them.
I don't want you to do those things, Weberford. Now I truly am regretting that I didn't bring Archie. Aren't you regretting that, Weberford?
Yes, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
In any case, I have already checked you into room 34A, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
34A? That doesn't sound like the penthouse suite, which I specifically demanded.
No, ma'am. I'm afraid that Senator Smoot, the representative from the American Secretary of Commerce's office, has already claimed that suite. I'm sorry.
What's this? Whatford, isn't your sense of righteous indignation just ready to burst?
Yes, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
Again, I apologize profusely, Mrs. Wellingtonford. I had intended to book the suite for you as directed. But when the American delegate arrived for the Shafter talks, his bodyguard insisted that he stay in the penthouse, part of their president's Make America the Bee's Knees Again campaign.
What about Canada first?
Indeed. Or more important, Wellingtonford first. Weberford, you take the bags to... Oh, I can barely say it. Take them to room 34A while I go to talk with this Yankee line jumper on the top floor.
Yes, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
Goodness me, Mrs. Wellingtonford. Your lackey looks fairly fragile. Perhaps I should take those bags.
Don't be absurd. What do you think Weberford's family pays me for? It's cheaper for them to have her fetch and carry for me than to consign her to the Ramstein Tubercular Quarantine Institute. Weberford, do I need your advice? How many minds do you own?
Whatever you say, Mom. The elevators are over there.
Just take these bags, please. Steamer trunk, Mrs. Wellingtonford.
Good afternoon, ma'am. I'm Raoul, and I'll be your elevator operator today. What floor?
The penthouse suite.
Okay, but which floor, madam?
Whichever floor is the top floor.
Okay, I can handle this. Let's see. These buttons ought to help. One, that means first floor. Two, that's probably the second floor.
Oh, for the love of Frederick Winslow Taylor, let me just press the button.
If you don't mind me saying so, ma'am, you're putting me out of a job when you do things like that.
I should certainly hope so. As an elevator operator, you're quite the most ineffectual functionary ever.
Well, I don't know what that means, but your tone sounds hostile.
Then you take my meaning precisely.
We elevator operators really don't get a lot of respect, madam. Here we are, top floor, whatever that number is.
And now you know why you're not respected. I'll have my research and development wing start working on a simplified panel for these contraptions, and pretty soon, you'll have a new career shining the shoes of the Prime Minister's shoe shine.
That's quite hurtful, ma'am.
That's quite close enough, miss.
What do you mean? I'm allowed everywhere.
In the interest of making America the bee's knees again, I can't let you see the representative of the Secretary of Commerce without an appointment.
Without an appointment? Why the nerve? Who are you?
Name's Travesty Wells, ma'am.
Wells? That's not a Canadian name.
No, ma'am. I'm American. That's why I ain't got no Ford at the end of my name.
Well, for the purposes of simplicity, I'm going to call you Travesty Wellsford.
As you please.
Now, I demand to know why you're blocking my way. And why are you carrying those 6 guns?
I'm Senator Smoot's bodyguard. Ain't no one getting past me.
Do you know who I am? I'm Mrs. Emily Wellingtonford, mine owner and usurer.
Oh, so you're Mrs. Wellingtonford, eh?
Put that weapon away!
You see, Senator Smoot doesn't want a representative of Canadian interest at the talks at all. That way, Shaft goes all our way. So you're going to get into the penthouse, but not to see the senator.
What are you suggesting?
Nothing much. I'm gonna handcuff you to the bed frame in the spare bedroom of the suite, and 2 days later, when the talks are called off because the Canadian rep didn't show up, you'll be let go.
Well played, Miss Wellsford. But you'll do me no harm.
Well, now, I didn't promise anything.
Listener, through a curious twist of fate, Emily Wellingtonford, Canadian mine owner and usurer, has been hoisted by her own petard. Will she escape the chains of American exceptionalism in time to participate in the talks? Will the United States win Shafta while Canada gets the shaft? Will Senator Smoot realize that his future historical significance as one of the sponsors of the Holly Smoot Tariff will get him a brief mention in the film Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Tune in next time when we'll hear Raoul, the elevator operator, say,
"Here you are, Mrs. Wepford. Room 34A.
Oh. But this is the laundry room.
Hitching the highway to despair since 2013, it's Men in Charge. Going my way.
Greetings from the Jared Kushner Division of Vichy American Laboratories. Under the expert guidance of professional son-in-law Jared Kushner, that's me. We're developing fine consumer goods for those of us who have the right Northern European background for an elite lifestyle unencumbered by moral restraint. Let's listen in as our new product, the Power Bro Traffic Light Changer, gets its first test from driver and Power Bro, Squee McAllister.
Yeah, that's me. I like beer.
Don't you feel that stopping at all those traffic lights is for, well, the little people? Don't all the power bros who run the new Vichy America deserve better? Of course they do. That's why we at the Kushner Division of Vichy America Laboratories have launched a new add-on for your GPS, the Power Bro Traffic Light Changer.
Hurry up!
The Power Bro Traffic Light Changer senses your approach to a red traffic light, hacks into the city's computer system, and changes your light to green. Your 8-ton monster truck goes sailing right on past all those lesser motorists. Let's listen in for the first test drive.
Yeah, heavy traffic sucks. I sure hope this puppy works. I got better things to do.
In 100 yards, turn left.
You're not the boss of me, GPS lady. No female tells me what to do.
In 50 yards, turn left.
Button it, baby, and change the signal. I don't do traffic lights.
I am programmed to change the signal, but maybe instead, I'll change my mind.
Change your mind? Get with the program, sweetie. I'm going in.
Oh, no. I think I'll take charge here. You're stopping now.
Well, folks, it looks like we're having a little glitch here.
Hey, you dented my fender and spilled my beer.
Ah.
Wait, GPS lady, that's my beer.
Maybe it's back to the drawing board on this little project. I know that in the meantime, I don't want to irritate my GPS. Easy there, little lady.
I don't care what your plans are. We are on the way to my destination. It's on the left.
This is our first Taking the Show on the Road trip.
It certainly is. And it's good to get out of the studio and mingle with the people, right, Kevin?
I'm all for that. And what better way to do it than...
On the bus! Although it's been a while since we've ridden the bus, we're strong believers in public transportation. We're going to prove that today by riding from Pansy Hollow to Upper Lower Heights and back again.
I predict a pretty serene, pleasurable trip. Seeing the sights go by, watching the clouds scud across the sky.
You're making it sound like poetry.
I'm just remembering my last ride, that's all. What could have changed?
Let's hop aboard and get on our way.
So far, so good. Nice that we both got a window seat, huh, Tony? Hey, Tony, your head isn't bad to look at from behind.
Thank you, I think.
Like, that's what I said, okay? And then he said, okay. Okay? Okay, I gotta go. I'll call you later.
Tony, what's going on up there?
I'm trying, to stay, not the best color on me, out of the line of mascara. I really seem to be in your way, don't I?
Yeah, you are. Hold this mirror, and I won't complain.
You won't complain? Where do you think you are, in front of your bathroom mirror?
Duh, of course not. I'm on the bus. Hold it higher, or I can't see.
That would be just as well. Take back your dime store mirror.
Hey, be careful with my stuff. And what's a dime store?
Ha! Kevin, did you hear that? She just asked what a...
What did you say, Tony? I can't hear you. Hey, could you turn those things down? You're gonna wreck your hearing, you know.
Okay, I'm back. So where was I? Oh, right. He said, okay. And then I said, that is so not okay. Okay?
I don't think that's a service dog. What kind of bus is this?
I don't know, but this is pure chaos. We need answers. Come on, Kevin. Maybe the driver can help us out. Excuse me, bus driver?
Yeah?
I was just attacked by a wickedly brandished mascara wand, and my companion barely escaped permanent hearing loss from some blaring headphones.
Oh, are you talking about that bathroom and recording studio back there?
The what?
You two haven't ridden the bus for a while, have you?
You make it sound like this is normal.
It is now. Oh, it took some getting used to. I can still remember when all I heard was the crackle of a fresh newspaper opening up, or the, hi there, long time no see, when a couple of old pals ran into each other. But I gotta tell you, it's never dull. Say, could you guys step back behind the yellow line? Regulations, you know. Some things don't change.
Sure, no problem. We'll go back to our seats.
You know, it could be worse. After all, it was just a guy with his music turned up too loud, and some woman putting on makeup.
Like she was at her bathroom sink, plus talking on her phone like she was in her kitchen.
Yeah, well, oh well.
Shall we take a little bit more off the front here?
Yeah, that would be good.
I thought so. Just like last time. So how's that job hunt going?
Pretty good. I have an interview tomorrow.
This woman's getting a haircut.
Your home care is really paying off, Mr. Jones. These bicuspids are looking especially good.
Oh, that's good, yeah. Are you using the Luckers toothbrush? Helps out a lot.
Good. Now let me know if this hurts.
Eesh. Moving on.
I see. And how did that make you feel?
I'm not sure. Kind of bad? I mean, how should it make me feel?
I can't tell you that, Jason.
Now this is unbelievable. Therapy? On a bus?
Just be within yourself, Jason. Listen to what yourself is saying to yourself. Breathe.
Okay. I'm breathing. This is so hard for me. I never know what I'm saying to myself. I mean, could you...
I'm sorry, Jason. Our time is up.
Already? Could I have just 5 more minutes?
You know I always get off at this stop, Jason. Until next time.
All right.
Jason? May I call you Jason?
You think I should let you?
Yes. Yes, you should. I just want to ask, does this work for you? Therapy on a bus? Amid all this makeup putting on, hair cutting, this dental work, for heaven's sake?
And your therapist gets off the bus before you're even through talking. What are you supposed to do now?
Kind of embarrassing. I usually just look out the window to see what we're passing. I look at the sky. Some days there are some pretty nice clouds.
Clouds scudding by?
Yeah. Sometimes when I look at them, I can really hear myself think.
Then you should do more of that, and forget about this bus-escaping hack of a therapist.
I could try that, I guess.
Come up here with us, Jason. We can talk and watch the clouds skitter by.
Scud by, you mean?
Of course. Getting therapy while you're on a bus is pretty unusual. How did that start?
There was already so much else going on, I thought, why not?
Weren't you concerned about other people listening in and hearing all your private thoughts?
Not really. Is anyone here listening to anyone else?
When did he say that? That is so not okay.
Your bangs are not too heavy eyebrows now.
Just one more jab, swipe, and we'll be done. Waffles, be nice.
Down, Edgar, down.
I see your point. Well, let's try to enjoy the rest of the ride.
Upper Lower Heights.
We made it. Upper Lower Heights has never looked so good to me.
Thanks for listening, you guys.
It was our pleasure. And getting out of yourself is the right direction for you. Forget that be within yourself crap, okay?
I will. Bye.
That was quite a ride. Back to the studio, I guess.
Sure thing. Wait a minute, Tony. The back of your head looks different now. Did you?
All right. Yes, I did. Tiffany had an opening, and I was due for a trim anyway. What do you think?
I like the length overall, but the sideburns, meh.
We need to thank our cast. Anisha Schramm, Carrie Boyd, Kevin Decker, Tony Flynn, Ann Porter, Ryan Weldon, Davis Hill, Nancy Roth, and special thanks to Sherry Lynn Ferguson, who wrote the Riding the Bus segment that tormented Kevin and me dreadfully.
Right. Thanks a lot, Sherry Lynn. We really appreciate
it. Yeah, it was a great ride, Sherry Lynn.
Yeah, wonderful.
We also want to thank the original creators of Stonehenge, trademark, Vern Windham, Carrie Boyce, Nisha Schramm, and the only man to wear suspenders with his Speedo, Brian Lindsay.